Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. The debt is fraud. Don't forget, learn, pray, act. And what we're all about, what we're trying to these ground movements we're trying to create in every county, which we need you to get involved, is about holding public servants accountable. Our government is not that building in your state capitol and those buildings in D.C. Our government are the people we are electing. Do not think that there are any persons that are greater in authority in our framework of government other than our representatives. We go through this in detail. We're supposed to have a Republican form of government. And so if we're holding our representatives accountable, getting them to actually exercise the authority and putting back into check the judiciary, the executive only has the authority to execute the laws that the representatives make. The fact that the representatives are being fed laws from the bureaucrats that the executive has been made, that is made, that they co-opted and got, this is such a tangled web, folks. When the president was allowed, or Congress gave the president powers he wasn't supposed to have and created a bureaucracy, next thing you know, they're creating the laws. And that's happening in your state. The lobbyists are actually creating laws. They're enforcing and pushing all these things upon us. I just want to help you understand. What's going on in many of the states around you, you may not understand this, but this is history repeating itself. Well, how do you say so, GR? In 1763, when King George made the decision, actually I think it's 1762, when they decided to actually have the colonies pay for their war debt. And so they started increasing the taxation and so forth. And so what they ended up doing was pissing the colonists off. So the King George, as they started pushing back, said, I'm not going to have this. And he started replacing your government in the colonies, replaced the governors and the legislators with his own governor. And from that point on, it was assuming more and more control, more and more power. The only good thing was, at that point in time, the colonists realized what was going on. They were not illiterate. They knew what to do, and they started acting appropriately. They got organized. This is why we read you the Tory Acts, because the Tory Acts shine a light on what was really happening tactically down in all of those counties in those colonies starting off in 1763 as they started creating the provincial government, because the Tory Acts actually provide the insight that Continental Congress and this whole effort was basically being initiated and moving forward. This movement was moving forward because these provincial governments were being formed, because at that point in time, they didn't have a representative government when the king took it over. So they started recreating their representative government under their rights in opposing the monarch. In our constitutional republic, we have a representative government at the county level. And if they're not doing your bidding and they're not actually doing what needs to be done in pushing these issues, in fighting back in this broad spectrum warfare that's being waged against the states and we the people, then they need to be called out. I can't fathom. It just bothers me to think that there's these people that really believe they're good people in your state legislature. They're conservatives. They love Jesus. And they go to church every Sunday, but they are so clueless regarding our Constitution and the rule of law that they don't recognize the urgency in creating literally a constitutional crisis and forming emergency sessions. But our forefathers did. They understood and they started moving with the exigencies of the day. And they actually started organizing themselves. And as things slowly evolved from 1763 to 1764, or 1774, I'm sorry, not 1 year. It took 11 years for them to finally get to the point, or actually probably 10 years, for them to finally get to the point where they really started organizing a union. And that union that ended up forming in 1774 was the Articles of Association and the very first petition that was from all of the colonies. Basically, it was a reassertion of all of the petitions that came forward from the colonies as well. But now they finally felt it necessary because they weren't getting any response from Britain regarding their petitions. So they felt necessary to actually provide with an accumulative petition and providing the king, letting him know that they've created articles of association that all of these 13 colonies were a union and they were resolved in doing these very specific things. And that's when the king, ratcheted up to the next step and started actually pushing his way into Massachusetts. And we all know about the shot across the shot heard around the world. Mm-hmm. Well, what we need to do, I'm sorry, Tammy, I didn't mean to go down this, this monologue, but I get all passionate about this. And so welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm still kind of doing this introduction, but I'm just so frustrated. I can't believe I'm here trying to help your state legislators, folks. I'm here trying to get them to wake up to understand the control that they have over their senators. And as a matter of fact, I happen to see because, well, as we know, Tammy here is actually from Wyoming. And I happen to know that in Wyoming, we actually have a lot of people that are kind of pissed off, very pissed off, as a matter of fact. And there is a, help me out here, there is a meme that just came out how all of these senators basically took a whack at Trump. And is it Brasso? I think it's Brasso. That's his name?
No, I'm locked out of my Facebook right now, so I don't know anything.
On. No. Your senator in the U.S. Senate is Brasso, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. So being informed voter, conservative, what have you, Wyoming. And I forget the gal that runs that, but there was a meme on her page that basically identified all of these senators that went against what Trump was trying to do. I think he was actually trying to create a doge, a permanent, body or what have you. Now, I don't know how everybody feels. I'm not for doge. I'm actually for the state stepping in and doing their job. But that being said, because of the illiteracy and everybody's complaining, suck it up, stop complaining. If I could, I'd use an expletive here and I'd slap you. That's what I would say, because y'all deserve a slap. Because that senator, those senators in that U.S. Senate should be taking their marching orders on everything they do from your state legislature. We've been trying. I've sent out the email saying, hey, guess why you don't have your suffrage in the Senate? It's because you're not demanding it. And I have the best dialogue I have right now is with South Dakota. And I don't want to mention any names, but I will tell you, folks, please go to Reclaiming the Republic. Go to the Constitutional Articles page and just go down to the 2025 Constitutional Minutes that I sent out. You can see if your state is listed there. If your state is not listed there, then that means I don't have your state legislature's email addresses. Now, I had a good patriot send me a link to both the House and the Senate legislative. You can get the emails from these pages. The problem is, folks, and I'm not going to do this because I don't have the time. I ask you, because you probably have more time than I do, because this is all I'm doing. And believe me, I'm doing more things that have nothing to do with the movement because I'm drowning. Anyway, you need to go and one by one, if that's how your state legislature has basically set up how to communicate, then you need to extract those emails one by one and then send them to me, and I will be able to send off an email. I don't have the time to go through 50 states, because how much, think about it, you have over 100, and it takes a click, cut, paste, copy, and then to manage all that data and assemble all of it and keep it all straight, that takes time. That's an hour I don't have. I need your help. Yeah. And so if you want me to send it, or why don't you could equally send that, because it's a PDF. That's a PDF, and as a matter of fact, even the documents, because when you read that the constitutional minutes, it's everything I told them, then you attach the two files that are over on the constitutional perspectives page. The constitutional perspectives page are all my new articles, and I have three articles over there. One is the truth about the 17th Amendment, and the other one is... They're the top two. I've got to do this, and I hate having to, break my moat. But when I'm talking about stuff, I really need to talk profoundly or directly. So the 25 constitutional minutes is on the constitutional articles page. That is the first button down from the home button. The constitutional perspectives page is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 buttons down. And if you click on that, the two articles that were attached to the email that I sent those state legislatures is the truth about the 17th Amendment and who is failing America. Well, the truth is, folks, you are, and your representatives. It's a representative self-government. If we're not governing and actually deriving the direction of our representatives, then, it's whoever's controlling it, the courts, the corporations, everybody that has no business controlling your government is going to continue to control it. That's the facts. You have to take the wheel. You don't just say, okay, GR, drive us. Sorry, it can't work that way. We can't have a king. The system we have requires we, the people. Start getting involved. Help me. I can do some of the, big lifting for you. Give me those email addresses, and I'll send those emails. And then I will start ferreting through that. But I'm actually working with a representative out of South Dakota. And the bottom line is I have a hard time understanding why nobody has even taken a moment. So if you are living in one of those states, as I go back to the constitutional minutes of 2025, and I look at the states that we sent these to, which is Colorado, Georgia, Iowa, Idaho, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan, Montana, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Utah, Washington, and Wyoming. Now, there may be other states that may be easy to do, and get it to me. I'll be happy to do it. I'm lacking resources, folks. I need your help. You hear me say this every day. It's not news. I say it every day. At the end of each show, I need your help. So as I go through these, states, and I send these emails out, I am absolutely flabbergasted that not one person from Montana said, you know what? What is this thing you talk about suffrage in the U.S. Senate? I don't even think if people know what suffrage means. It's an important word because we had women suffrage. We had the suffrage of the minorities or, the downtrodden. The suffrage, what is that? Folks, it is your right to vote. And when we talk about suffrage in the Senate for the state legislature, it's that easy. It is the state legislature's right to vote. In other words, when the Constitution was created, they could not create a proxy system. We didn't have the technology to allow your state legislatures to actually call your Senate while they're watching the stupidity of Booker on the floor and say, are you kidding me? Get that guy off the floor. Get work done. Bottom line, you have the power. Your state legislature has the power to force these guys into voting. If they fail to vote, the consequences are simple. They've refused to actually support the Constitution. How is that? Well, the Constitution demands that they provide, the U.S. Senate provides the suffrage of the state legislature. So in other words, the state legislature, if they have the ability to tell them exactly how they want to vote, and they deny that vote, they vote otherwise, then that means that they have failed to give them their suffrage, which means that they violated Article 5 of the Constitution. That's right, folks. Every U.S. senator that decides not to vote the way the state legislature just told them how, for this treaty, for this bill, for whatever, the state legislature tells them how to vote, and they don't vote that way, then they can charge them with a violation of their oath of office and extradite them back. Ah, so all's they need to do, and here's the bitter pill. All's you need to do at the state level is demand compliance to the Constitution. Now, what does that mean, Tammy? What does that mean? Because that's the kryptonite of every politician.
Means exactly what you said. What do you mean?
Well,
it
means that every person that is under oath could then be held accountable. That means that they too would be accountable to that oath. And I want you, the people, to know that everybody that has taken an oath to office and are paying for these unconstitutional bonds and are creating all of this unconstitutional governing apparatus that shouldn't even exist. And we allow it to exist because we don't hold them accountable, because they don't want to be held accountable. They won't hold themselves accountable. And until we actually say, you're gone, and we're going to keep on replacing every schmuck that goes in until you actually are being held accountable. This is one of the reasons why we have a pledge that we want you to have them sign. Have them sign this pledge and actually have them sign it and have the sheriff or the county clerk sign it as well. We have to become serious about holding them accountable to their oath of office. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment demands it. It's the rule of law. It is the supreme law of the land. You violate your oath, you're to be removed. But nobody enforces it. Do you see the paradox?
Mm-hmm.
And who, ultimately, the blood is on whose hands? Ultimately, it's we the people.
It's on our hands.
That's right. It's we the people. If we're not demanding that they live up to these standards, then, you know, who are we to say that, you know, they can't do anything, because we don't care. We're not saying that, hey, you can't do those things, so we got to stop saying it. We have to hold them to their oath, folks. It's the only way things will turn around. And it's amazing how divine this concept is. I can tell you, in heaven, you're going to be held accountable to your birthright. You're going to be held accountable to the Creator. You know, that as a citizen in heaven, you will be held accountable to those obligations that a citizen must carry. I mean, even the scriptures say this. When Christ, the apostles are talking about, you know, be ye now for a fellow citizen, you know, in the church. We have obligations. We have an obligation to live a certain way. You don't live that way, then you stand in jeopardy of losing your citizenship. And there are other citizens in the life beyond, and, you know, I guess the hell, fire, brimstone, you know, those kinds of places, right? Anyway, I apologize for going this deep, but the whole movement, the whole crux of why I'm running my campaign to get you to actually push the issue to become an elector. We have to take the Electoral College back away from the party. The party has no business controlling it. It is ours. We, the people, are supposed to choose our electors, and our electors are to choose our president. This is how they've actually been absconding and controlling and making sure that the next globalist is going to be in that position to do what's necessary. And believe me, folks, if you don't think Trump is a globalist, then explain to me why I still see chemtrails being over, you know, sprayed over my head. Explain to me why I still see this movement of a digital currency. Oh, it may not be the CBDC, but there's still a formalized digital currency being rammed down our throats. There could be. I'm still giving everybody the benefit of the doubt. Let's say Trump, because we know he's illiterate on the Constitution. He doesn't know. So let's just say he is. Why is he not doing something about all of these problems from the people that he's appointing? Well, because he's illiterate. So either we have to speak up, or we just have to, you know, bite our tongues and take it. That's it, folks. That's the message for the day. Shut up and take it. See, because if you're not standing up, if you're not using the passion of your lifeblood, your life, your children's life, our posterity and our prosperity is all at risk. Anyhow, so this is why I get so upset, because there's not one state out there that actually recognizes the need for creating an emergency session. Your county commissioners or supervisors, they're meeting on a regular basis, and it's just business as usual. You know, how can we get more federal money in? And what more things can we surrender, property rights or what have you? Folks, you need to get involved. Anyway, I'm done with the sales pitch and the marketing. We're doing, as a matter of fact, this is your favorite time of year. Because I'd like to say everybody lives for these times when we read the ratification debates. Now, we only read highlights out of this. And I know Tammy is really looking forward to this, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is where the brains of the Constitutional Convention comes back. And they literally stand in front of the state delegates and explain what this Constitution means. And they actually talk about and use the same justifications, or pretty close to those things that we heard in the convention, the Constitutional Convention in Madison's notes. But this is different, because everything that we heard and read in Madison's notes was under Madison's eye, under his filter, how he decided to write it and interpret or what have you. So this is actual testimony being submitted to the delegates who have the power to either ratify or reject the Constitution. So when you read the Constitution, or I should say, when you read the ratification debates on the federal Constitution in every state where it's vigorously debated, do not read and take any credence with anti-federalist testimony. They're doing what they can to actually subvert, pervert, and get people to not buy into the Constitution. The fact is, as the Federalist stipulated, clarified, and defined what those lines mean, because the Constitution was actually ratified, those stipulations become legally binding. Why? Because it was ratified. What does that mean? That means a formal acceptance based on those stipulations, based on those terms and definitions. This compact was ratified and accepted by this state. I try to help people understand. In contract law, this is the one point in time where the Constitution is capable of receiving clarification. It's capable of receiving this clarity. Because as it is being stipulated, just like when you buy a car, if somebody stipulates that as long as you own this car and it gets into the contractor, you can actually prove that that was stipulated, those are legally binding. So the ratification debates are legally binding. Let a lawyer tell you otherwise. Common sense will tell otherwise.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so folks, I want you to make sure you write this day down, because this is the introduction to the ratification debates and why these are legally binding. So this is what we have to go through, so that as you hear everything that we're telling you legally binding terms and definitions. This isn't just me saying this. We've already read the other artifacts. Last year, we've read these all the time. Madison clearly stated that the Constitution has to be followed based on how the ratification debates sold the Constitution. He said this in his career as a congressman. As a matter of fact, he read the ratification debates in his debates against the National Bank. He pointed to them in many other debates in Congress. He was consistent in saying that the ratification debates are the only guide in understanding that Constitution. Never once did he say, oh, these editorials we threw out into the newspapers to kind of help the public understand, that had nothing to do with the ratification debates. And that only went into, I mean, folks, many people couldn't read in the day. And nobody that I know of, and there was no company that was capable of distributing the one newspaper or the two newspapers that possibly printed the Federalist Papers at the time. There may have been three or four, maybe. Nobody knows for sure. But the reality is not everybody received those, so that it polluted everybody. The bottom line is those things were just a small little occurrence. They may be insightful, but they're not legally binding. Don't waste your time necessarily in understanding those. You need to understand the ratification debates first. Then you can see how the Federalist Papers kind of supplement the ratification debates. That being said, as I was stating, let a lawyer try to come along and tell you, oh, no, those aren't really legally binding. These guys are trained, and it is their job to try to create law, try to redefine everything, which is one of the first words that a good lawyer, always says depends. When you ask them a legal question, they'll say, well, that depends, because it's about these little tools that they have to take something that is concrete and apply these tools to make that concrete turn into rubber so they can start bending it in any direction that they want to. And then they take another tool to kind of affix it. So now they've made it go in this direction. And wow, isn't that magical? Because we ruled and said so. Clearly, folks, they have no power to create law. They have no power to redefine anything. And yet we've allowed them to become the snake oil salesman that they have become. I have a very, very low opinion of lawyers. You know, I know that there are people that are in it really thinking that they're doing good things, and they have no idea. This is a profession of liars. Mm-hmm. And I say that just like
when we look at our the entertainment industry, that is another profession of liars. They literally get up and they read a script. It doesn't matter if they believe it or not. They read the script. They do what they're told. So technically, they're monkeys dancing on a string. They're dancing to the organ grinder. Who is the organ grinder? Now we get down to conspiracy theories, and what we want to get down to is the ratification debate. So Tammy and I discussed this off air. We decided to follow the old regime of reading the ratification debates as they were ratified, which means that Pennsylvania comes into the queue. Pennsylvania was the first state to ratify the Constitution, and actually, technically Delaware was, but we're starting with Pennsylvania because they began the ratification debates much earlier than Delaware. So Delaware ratified, but they don't have any contentious debates. In other words, they rubber stamped it. I don't even think they met for more than a week. And many of the states are rubber stamped it. Delaware, New Jersey, Georgia, Connecticut, Maryland, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. I don't even think Rhode Island even called for a convention. I think the state legislature just said, yeah, we ratify it and admit us into the union, which was a clear violation how they came in. Nevertheless, Congress has the power to admit states into the union. And even though, Rhode Island, is riding along in an improper process, Congress does have the power to admit them. Therefore, the new rules applied because they didn't need to necessarily ratify the existence of the Constitution. The Constitution had already been ratified and the government had been created. So now at this point in time, the government could actually, so you didn't have to come back and say, yeah, we ratify it. You could just make the application, or go through the debates is what I'm trying to say. You didn't have to go necessarily through the process. Because at this point in time, when Rhode Island joined in 1790, Congress at that time had the power and was ready to start admitting new states or getting prepared to admit new states. And technically, Rhode Island was the new state that being admitted. So, and in some ways, let's be honest here, Rhode Island gets credited as the 13th state. I don't think they deserve that credit. They didn't follow anything. They were admitted into the union. I believe we really had an original 12. Does that make sense, Tammy? In other words, I think we're giving them credit as being a founding state, and they don't deserve that credit. Technically, even North Carolina. Now, North Carolina ratified in that first year of the session, if I remember correctly, because they ratified in 89. That was November of 89, so they were only halfway through that first session of Congress. So I kind of can extend that credit because they actually convened and debated the Constitution. We're going to read theirs because it was a vigorous debate. But in Pennsylvania, it was the first state to meet, and they actually had a vigorous debate, so much so, it was so heated, that what we have, what they submitted as their record of the ratification debates, had nothing to do with the real debates. It was the the discourses of the Federalists of how they explained the Constitution to all of the negative anti-Federalist questions and pushes. In other words, they're doing what I basically recommend you do anyway. Don't include the anti-Federalist. If you want to have a really good picture, but don't get caught up. Don't get caught up, oh, Mason was right. Oh, Mason... When Mason talks about the destruction of the militia and how he was right about doing that, the reality is the federal government had to violate the Constitution to destroy the militia. And they did. Which means that the Constitution didn't cause the problem. You see, the whole context here is George Mason is saying, don't ratify this because they're going to end up destroying the militia. Well, hold on here. As Madison said, hey, hold on. They can only destroy it if they actually allow, if they violate the Constitution. That's how they destroy it. The Constitution itself doesn't allow them to destroy it. The militia is a state-controlled entity. And so there's no way they could have done what they did without the states allowing it and by violating the Constitution. So when you read these things, don't get sucked into those stupid arguments, because the real answer is, oh, yeah, but if they do that, that right there is a direct violation of the Constitution. So how is the Constitution the problem?
Right.
Okay. That starts to make sense. Now, what we're going to start off with, folks, is on Monday, November 26th in Pennsylvania. Now, you're going to notice that there are literally just a couple of people that speak. McCain and Wilson. And Wilson is the primary. McCain speaks here and there. But Wilson, and he was in the convention, very adamant and very vocal in the Kemet convention. One of the things, because he's really keen on the democracy and the power of the people, in some ways he kind of looks at the Constitution as a Republican democracy. But that all being said, what I want to start with, because you may find merit in expanding your reading from beyond what we read, because before we get into the delegated powers, on the paragraph that leads into this, right, it, basically this is what Mr. Wilson says. He says, permit me to add in this place that the science, even of government itself, seems yet to be almost in its state of infancy. Governments in general have been the result of force, of fraud, and accident. After a period of 6,000 years has elapsed since the creation, the United States, because at this point in time, they were believing. So let me stop here, because he's giving history of 6,000 years, 200 years ago. And mm-hmm. So we're well beyond the 6,000 years of 200 years, because we just went past a millennium, right? So in other words, yeah. We've hit the 7,000th year. Based on the science, because there are people out there that number has adjusted to fit the narrative. Oh, that we can't be in this technically, because the Earth is older than 7,000 years.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But there are people that believe that the creation, all these things are on these fixed scientific timelines that man has concocted. And I'm just here to tell you that most all of these types of things are things of faith given to us. We need to apply the faith so that we can understand these in greater. But just wanted to point out, here's a point a few hundred years ago where they were talking about 6,000 years we've been experimenting with government. This is government, you know, became well after Adam and Eve. You know, they were really, if you want to call them feudal or what have you, tribal. But anyway, after a period of 6,000 years has elapsed since the creation, the United States exhibits to the world the first instance, as far as we can learn, of a nation unattacked by external forces, unconvulsed by domestic insurrections, assembling voluntarily, deliberating fully, and deciding calmly concerning that system of government under which they would wish that they and their posterity should live. These are very powerful words. He's laying out that the Constitution, you got to remember the Articles of Confederation, I've said this all the time, that was concocted during warfare. They didn't even have a moment of peace. Let's get this baby done so we can stick it and put it out there and get it on its way. You know, let's get moving. They had this ability to calmly sit down and debate. And from May to September, that's what they did. And they created a framework of government that the world hadn't ever seen, nor had the world ever seen something done not by in haste or any other fashion, you know, by rule, by tyranny, by despotism. Look what Hitler did when he reframed the German government. The ancients, so enlightened on other subjects, were very uninformed with regard to this. They seem scarcely to have had any idea of any other kinds of government than the three simple forms designed by the epithets monarchical, aristocratical, I'm sorry, and democratical. In other words, those were the three forms of government, the primary governments that they saw, that they understood. They did understand a Republican form of government as well. And I'm going to stop there, but I'm just saying, reading these documents is very insightful. We're only highlighting key things that help define the jurisdiction, help define the delegation of powers, help define that necessary and proper clause. There are hundreds and hundreds of pages. I think in Virginia, we're looking around 700 pages. In Pennsylvania, we're only looking at 98 because this is a condensed form. In other words, they don't have the anti-federalists in this. None. It's all federalist helping people understand the Constitution. So Pennsylvania is a really good book or a really good start because you're not getting polluted by the anti-federalists at this point. So let's move down to the highlighted part for delegated. Go ahead, Tammy.
Okay. Before the Revolution, many of the kings claimed to reign by divine right and others by hereditary right. And even at the Revolution, nothing further was effected or attempted than the recognition of certain parts of an original contract. Supposed at some former remote period to have been made between the king and the people. A contract seems to exclude rather than to imply delegated power.
Can I interrupt you here?
Yep.
So you didn't read the little subtext of Blackstone 233. One of the things that they were still using at this point in time was Blackstone and his commentaries on the law. And so Blackstone's commentaries were really based upon a monarchical theocracy. So when you see these highlights like this, go ahead and, you know, you may see these parentheses of just numbers. Those are footnotes, just to help you explain.
Okay.
Because you, the readers, are reading this as well. And when you see these things, this is actually, he's kind of citing Blackstone on page 233 or whatever that 233 is, because I think he had multiple volumes. Anyway, the point is here is that these men didn't create, they were creating a new government that would require commentary, a new set of commentaries on the law. They were creating something that was so radically different than a monarchical theocracy that it demanded that, you know, this, you know, comprehensive understanding of what should be the law in America under this hybrid three-tiered constitutional government. And before we could get to the three tiers, before we could even get too far out the gate, it started getting convoluted. Does that make sense? So The point is, when you see that, because I know you, the readers, as you read along, you're going to see Blackstone being cited. Don't get excited. They're only referencing, because that's their only base reference. They're still coming out of theory in creating this government. They're testing it. They haven't even fathomed yet that Blackstone does not apply. So keep going. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Do you want me to state the parentheses?
Yeah. So in the as you move forward, when you see a parentheses like that with Blackstone or Montesquieu, what have you, by all means, you can go ahead and cite that because the readers, I'm hoping they're reading along with us, so they'll see that and they'll go, okay. And if they don't have this, got to remember that these old books that they're citing, Montesquieu, Blackstone, and so forth, these men couldn't comprehend the type of government that they just created. Blackstone's basis of the law was the Bible. It was the king's Bible. It was a monarchy. It was a monarchical theocracy. Anyway, there were really good things. I mean, it's not that it wasn't, you know, all bad, but it doesn't apply. It's not analogous to our constitutional republic. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. A contract seems to exclude rather than to imply delegated power. The judges of Great Britain are appointed by the crown. The judicial authority, therefore, does not depend upon representation, even in its most remote degree. Does representation prevail in the legislative department of the British government? Even here, it does not predominate, though it may serve as a check. The legislature consists of three branches, the King, the Lords, and the Commons. Of these, only the latter are supposed by the Constitution to represent the authority of the people. This short analysis clearly shows to what a narrow corner of the British Constitution of the principle of representation is confined. I believe it does not extend farther, if so far, than any other government in Europe. For the American states were reserved the glory and the happiness of diffusing this vital principle throughout the constituent parts of government.
Okay, so diffusing means what, again?
Do you know what? Getting rid of it.
No. Diffusing, if you look at the synonym of diffusing, right? Diffusing means dispersing, spreading, disseminating, getting, you know, helping everybody understand.
Representation is the chain of communication between the people and those to whom they have committed the exercise of the powers of government. This chain may consist of one or more links, but in all cases, it should be sufficiently strong and discernible.
Okay, keep going.
To be left without guide or precedent was not the only difficulty in which the convention were involved. By proposing to their constituents a plan of a Confederate Republic, they found themselves embarrassed with another of peculiar delicacy and importance. I mean that of drawing a proper line between the national government and the governments of the several states. It was easy to discover a proper and satisfactory principle on the subject. Whatever object of government is confined in its operation and effects within the bounds of a particular state should be considered as belonging to the government of the state, of that state. Whatever object or government extends in its operation or effects beyond the bounds of a particular state should be considered as belonging to the government of the United States. But though this principle be sound and satisfactory, its application to particular cases would be accompanied with much difficulty, because in its application, room must be allowed for great discretionary latitude of construction of the principle. In order to lessen or remove the difficulty arising from discretionary construction on this subject, an enumeration of particular instances in which the application of the principle ought to take place has been attempted with much industry and care. It is only in mathematical science that a line can be described with mathematical precision, but I flatter myself that upon the strictest investigation, the enumeration will be found to be safe and unexceptionable and accurate, too, in as great a degree as accuracy can be expected in a subject of this nature. Particulars under this head will be more properly explained when we descend to the minute view of the enumeration which is made in the proposed Constitution.
Minute. So sometimes the minute is pronounced minute. Okay, so he's laying out this concept that, you know, for the most part, what is the states is everything within the state. However, there are some things that the federal government will extend to within the state. What are those things? Well, bankruptcy laws, the naturalization laws, those very few enumerated objects will actually extend to state functions, state actions, and so forth. So when we really look at what those enumerations are, they're very few, folks. Very few. This is why they go through this painstaking discourse. So anyway, now we jump down past Wednesday to Mr. Wilson. Again, it's pretty much, if you'll notice, Wilson on Monday, Wilson on Wednesday, and then, you know, they're skipping days. So this is when the anti-federalists are probably taking full control of the pulpit. But on Wednesday, Mr. Wilson gets up and he starts talking about enumerated objects. Now we have 3.5 minutes to get into this. So let's wait, and this is why I want to reemphasize, you need, if you don't understand, you're just picking up reading the ratification debates, you need to come back to this day, the very first day, to understand why these things are important and what is happening as he dispels, you know, the myths and clarifies what each line of the Constitution means, at least those lines that were questioned and challenged by the Anti-Federalists. There are parts of the Constitution that we will find nothing, you know, no challenges at all. Because at that point in time, everybody was satisfied regarding the suffrage of the Senate, or the suffrage of the state legislature and the Senate. So, well, you've read so much today. What did you take away? I'm just kidding. We're just getting started. But I know that once we get through probably Pennsylvania, you'll go, wow, there's a lot covered here. There's actually a lot covered in Pennsylvania. And then when we go through, because this is the challenge, folks, as we go through the different states, do you find a conflict? And I'll have to remember to ask you when we're all done. Do you find a conflict in one state from another state of how they explain the limitations of jurisdiction, how they, you know, clarified the importance of the delegated objects, the delegated powers, so forth and so on? Are there any conflicts that were created in how the state understood the Constitution? This is something probably, I don't know if Madison, he probably did read all the ratification debates. And so I believe that that's why he was, you know, so prodigiously, you know, advocating these are the objects that we must use in understanding the Constitution. So anyway, we've got a minute. I know you're pretty boisterous, so if I untap you to say something, just contain it to a minute. You know, I'm just trying to be funny. I just wanted to make sure that you had more than an opportunity to say something.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Listening
and learning.
I do get comments from people that, you know, it's just, you're stifling her. You're keeping her back. I want to hear more from her. I go, okay. Anyway. All right. Well, I'm excited as we start going through
this. Well, I don't
know
too much about the ratification debate, so I don't have a whole lot to comment on.
So everybody listening, other than those few people, I know Paul listens. As a matter of fact, when I miss a broadcast, I get a phone call from Paul. Hey, are you okay? What's going on? Because, you know, people that diligently listen, you know, I have others, Cynthia and others that are out there that, hey, what's happened? What's going on? I can't hear you. And so has the government come and assassinated me yet?
Right. Yeah.
I know.
That's a good question.
I know. Because there are people that are very concerned. So, folks, when we come back tomorrow, we'll actually cover more of these details. And we'll go through the delegations, the 17th Amendment. We'll go through the regulation. So remember, we talk about the 17th Amendment, of what it did and what it didn't do. Some clarity is going to come out of the ratification debates on this. So that being said, I'm hoping that you will actually start being what we need you to be, is that voice in taking back government so that we can wash the blood off our hands. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.